The conference is now being recorded.
Welcome to the fourth quarter financial year 2018 investor conference call for the NAOS listed investment companies. Your host is Sebastian Evans, Managing Director and Chief Investment Officer of NAOS AS Asset Management Limited. Please go ahead, Sebastian.
Great. Thank you very much, Tammy. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us right on the dot at 10:30. This is the conference call, quarterly conference call for our three listed investment companies, NCC, NAC, and NSC. As you would have hopefully have noticed, the presentation material was lodged on the ASX this morning and also sent around to anyone who's on our distribution list. So if you want to be added to that, please just email NAOS or go to the website. I'll get straight into it for the sake of time. So on slide three, obviously, I'm sure most people, if not all people on the call, would have seen this slide before, but I think it's just, you know, in times like these, especially worth touching on somewhat. Obviously, this is the NAOS investment beliefs. It's important for everyone to know that all three LICs are run exactly the same with the same philosophy. The only thing that changes is really the size of the company. So the small, you know, the smallest companies go in NCC. The, I suppose, the smaller companies, you know, small cap companies go in NSC, and then the mid cap to larger businesses go in NAC. But the focus on, you know, long-term investments philosophy, very concentrated portfolios with an industrial focus, and we completely ignore the index, that all remains exactly the same, no matter what LIC you're an investor in. Just touching on slide four, obviously I'm probably repeating myself here. I mean, the only thing that may have changed slightly is the number of holdings. So you can see that obviously NCC has 9 holdings as of the 30th of June, NSC 11, and NAC 11. So all very similar in regards to the number of businesses that they hold. And to be honest, I do get asked this question from time to time, but probably more of a reflection, yes, of our philosophy, but more of a reflection of the ability to find value in this particular market. Is not something that we're finding relatively easy, I suppose, to say the least. So we're clearly very happy with our own investments. So, you know, we'll continue to run a reasonably low figure, but you would expect that figure to move around from time to time over, you know, through an investment cycle. It may well be larger, but, you know, if we can't find any other investments and some of our current investments do reach fair value, then it may well decrease and our cash level in any of the fund can actually go to 100%. We don't have to be invested. Just moving on now to slide five, just a new quote we found there from one of our, I suppose, investment gurus that we follow, Howard Marks. I suggest people read that in their own time. But moving on to slide six, and obviously what everyone wants to talk about, I'm sure, is the quarter four performance for the three LICs. You know, and without a doubt, probably the most challenging quarter I've probably had since I've been at NAOS from a relative perspective. You know, going forward, there's two slides on each of the LICs, so I'll touch on each LIC specifically. But reviewing the performance, you can see the quarter four performance for NCC was down 2.93, NSC down 3.29, and NAC down 1.47. When you look at those figures, obviously not pleasing from an absolute sense, but when it, from a relative sense, it probably looks even worse when you look at the benchmarks of NCC and NSC. Obviously, we're up 7.67, so that benchmark being the Small Ordinaries Accumulation Index. And as at that time, NAC had an absolute benchmark, so some people would have picked up that that has now changed going into July, as that benchmark has now been changed to the ASX 300 Industrials Accumulation Index. What I would note, though, is obviously our inception figures, even though I suppose what we consider a poor month, you know, still remain in our view, in my view, especially solid, you know, still running at 16 and 15% respectively over, you know, 5 and a bit years and 3.5 years almost. So even with, you know, what we consider as a poor quarter performance, you know, we still very much focus on those long-term figures that hopefully justifies our investment process and philosophy. So touching on, I suppose, the meat of the presentation, this will probably be the most important part for investors in each of the LICs. The quarter four update for NCC, so I've tried to treat this like, I suppose, a bit of, you know, the quarter of the year that was, and then how we, what we're looking for over the next quarter especially. So for NCC, the portfolio performance finished up 7.13%. as I've been writing in my annual report letter, you know, to put that in perspective, NCC was up 12.5% almost as of December. So we're on track for a cracking year, and unfortunately we gave some of it back in the second half of the year, and unfortunately the market, you know, had probably a much stronger second half than it did first half. So it was probably the year that could have been, albeit we're still yet to have a negative financial or calendar year to date. I suppose the three key updates, the three most important updates of the fund I've put below, and the most notable one obviously was BSA, and from our point of view that was the most disappointing one. They had a downgrade in, right at the end of June relating to their HVAC business, that stands for Heating, Ventilation and Air Conditioning. It's really a construction type business, whereby the rest of their other businesses are annuity type businesses. They came out and said that they're having issues in Victoria mainly, where some of their, I suppose they're getting time delays. It's really putting a lot of cost pressure on that business. Ultimately, we've said time and time again that we don't believe this is a division that this business needs to own, and they're not the natural holder of. We think management is very aware of that because it's really discounting. It's leading to a discount of what we believe are there are much better businesses. So they've got a fantastic Connect business there that has a lot of work with NBN and Foxtel, for example. And then they have another business, a maintained business that does a lot of building maintenance, you know, for some very large institutions such as, you know, Telstra, Australian government and things like that. They also have a fire division that's growing very rapidly as well. But unfortunately, none of that matters while you've got a large loss-making business there. So we will be watching very closely what they come out with in the full-year result, not so much numbers-wise, but more strategy-wise. Pleasingly, I suppose the best position for the fund over the 12 months was a business that we've had now for many, many years. CGR's been in our portfolio. It has to be close for 4 years, I would have said. And it was really the shining light of the portfolio. They made an acquisition out of a distressed seller, and pleasingly they announced that this has gone ahead of schedule. I suppose the client retention's been much better than they expected, as is always a risk with some of these acquisitions, and they now expect that to make a positive contribution for 2018 and hopefully a better contribution for 2019 potentially. To put that in perspective, the share price of that particular investment increased over from 32 to 57 cents over FY18. And when you include the dividends, it's probably close to 60 cents. So a really pleasing investment for us, especially in the financial space, which is, you know, you've got to miss the odd pothole, obviously, as I've got a question here in regards to, you know, Royal Commissions and things like that. There's still in our view a lot of opportunities as the banks continue to disintermediate out of certain areas of the market, and CGR pleasingly have been able to capitalise on this. So we expect, you know, that business hopefully to provide some, we think their guidance is conservative for 19, and we'll be looking, closely to see what they come out and say in August. On probably our newer investment, an investment we've had for about 12 months, and we've been building up a position in for a while, is a business called Saunders. Saunders, to put in perspective, has been around for many, many years. It's been listed for, I think, since 2006, but probably been in operations for over 50 years. They've actually got a facility just located right next to Bankstown Airport. They do maintenance construction of storage tanks, whatever you can use a tank for, water, grains, whatever it is. And they have been around for many, many years and provided, they've got a very good, in our view, a good niche stronghold of that particular market. We've invested in this business based on a couple of points. Obviously, a new management team that is reasonably highly regarded in the space and has a good track record at their previous employer. And I suppose more importantly, the infrastructure backdrop in Australia, which we've got an updated slide on in regards to the amount of work that continues to go on in this country. And it is not work that's just, you know, dropping away in the next sort of 6 months or 12 months. It's, you know, it's here to stay for at least 5 years. So over time, Saunders should be a big beneficiary, as they bought a business about 12 months ago that maintains and builds regional bridges generally. So once again, should be a big beneficiary of this infrastructure spend. Pleasingly, for the first year, we got half the investment thesis right, and the fact that the revenues were up significantly, and when we say significantly, they were up sort of 30, 40, 50%. What we were significantly disappointed with is obviously there's one particular contract that's pretty much eaten away all their margins. So they'll make, anywhere between nothing, so break even, to $1 million for the year on a revenue basis, increased substantially. So obviously we haven't made this investment for 1 year, but it is disappointing that this is a business, if you go through their track record since 2006, when you look at all the available data, this is their worst year since being a listed business. So we very much believe the backdrop is conducive of strong revenue growth, that management have to be able to execute and build out a reasonable margin. And we'll see what commentary they provide in August. Once again, though, I suppose if you look at, you know, the two businesses on the left and the right, they're both net cash businesses. And in our view, if you look at BSA is still the strongest contributor, positive contributor to the NCC portfolio since inception. So when they do execute, they do perform, but obviously they do go through periods where the unexpected can eventuate. Looking forward, and it's important to note, obviously, that, you know, the last 3 months has been relatively quiet to a certain extent. And, you know, the meat, you know, I suppose why you become a fund manager, and the most important time or exciting time is reporting season. And that starts, you know, probably from the 16th of August, you know, right to the 29th of August next month. So, you know, the three things we're looking for is, you know, NCC's 9 positions, it has very little cash, but when you look at the look-through cash balances of all our investments, it's reasonably conservative. You know, the big ones, obviously, COG, they had an announcement yesterday. They've announced that they'll release their results on the 28th of August. They also announced that their leasing book was ahead of guidance in regards to the growth, and they've also taken up an option to go to 100% ownership of one of their finance broking aggregation business, CFG. So it was quite a positive update. If you back calculate the CFG numbers that they've given you, you can see that business has grown at a reasonable clip over the last year and a half. But, you know, for COG, it was obviously a drag on our performance this year, and we're looking, and the reason for that is they haven't had any negative updates. It's just been, they've been very quiet. They've almost made next to no announcements over the past 6 months up until yesterday. So, you know, the market will be very much looking for how the integration of the broking businesses are going and what value add they're providing to those brokers. Obviously, an updating on the leasing business, which we got yesterday. But most importantly, the market's looking for how they're going to allocate a lot of that cash that they raised about, have to be 12 months ago, and how they can put it to use. And they did say in the announcement yesterday that they expect those cash proceeds to be used over the next few months. So we'll wait and see. Wingara, one of our newer ones, so probably a year and a half to 2 years old. Important to note that most agriculture-related companies, it's a March year-end business, or you can summer September year-end, and that's because of the seasons. You know, Wingara has, you know, no broker coverage. I think we're probably the only fund manager in that business. And, you know, in our view, could really be the sleeper of the portfolio. So come September, obviously, there'll be a month later, but, you know, this business is doing a lot of things. They've been very busy. They're building a new facility out at Raywood, which is their second oat and hay storage facility. And they recently bought a business just outside of Melbourne called Osco, which is a cold storage facility with a focus on what they called red goods, which is ultimately meat, so lamb and beef. It is then exported to, you know, the likes of, you know, Korea, Japan, China, Taiwan. So it will be very interesting to see how that business is going, the Osco business especially, and then obviously an update on Raywood, because that really gives them a significant increase in the amount of exporting tonnes they can do in regards to oat and hay. And, you know, when people look at a lot of the trade rhetoric coming out of the US and tariffs, there's a good article today in the Financial Times about the amount of meat storage or the amount of meat that's being stored in the US because the Chinese simply don't want to import it from the States anymore because it's too expensive. So hopefully this provides more opportunities for the likes of, you know, Australian businesses who can continue to export to the likes of China and other nations. And then finally, Enero. So another one that's been in the fund for a while and another one that has probably been extremely quiet over the past sort of 12 months, but, you know, one we think has a positive outlook. They made a couple of acquisitions over the past year and a half. For those of you who don't know, they do PR and advertising. And, you know, they have a business, for example, that was rated the best technology PR agency in the world. And they have some very large clients, you know, some of the largest clients that you would know in the technology industry globally. And ultimately, we're looking for proof that Enero, they set out on a strategy to get bigger you know, I suppose, bigger clients, or they have fewer smaller clients, which ultimately leads to better margins. And that's what we'll be looking for, so to give us some idea of, you know, who are the new client wins, how large are they, and does that allow you to increase your margin? And more importantly, as Enero builds out a proper service offering from digital to PR to creative, it really becomes a one-stop shop. And as we've said, you know, the Deloittes and the Accentures of the world have been buying up these businesses at a rate of not so very big prices. So there is clearly an opportunity there. It just comes down to, once again, comes down to execution for that business and management team. Touching on NSC now, obviously as of 30 June, so performance since inception, about 7 months, 6 to 7 months, was negative 3.44%, and 60% of the fund is represented by the top five holdings. So I've got the three, it would be the three largest in front of everyone right now, so I'll really touch on, I suppose, the quarters that they had, and each of them did provide a reasonable update. So obviously M&F is our largest position, and we have spoken about it. You know, to give people a view, we've known the M&F business now for over 4 years, and we believe it is one of the most, I suppose, highest quality businesses in the Aussie market. They announced about a month ago that they acquired a Singaporean-based business, and they also provided updated guidance for FY18, or they reaffirmed guidance. So pleasingly, the stock increased from about 460 today to about, I think today it's 530-ish. But, you know, when you look at that, that's basically our cost price. So, you know, we would look for the business hopefully to continue with the momentum that it's got. In regards to the Singapore acquisition, though, most people would not know this, but in Singapore, you really need to own the infrastructure as a telco or even a software provider to be able to resell your software services. Otherwise, you're reliant on other people to use their infrastructure, and they can really charge you whatever they want. So it makes it uneconomical, although Singaporean-based. Telcos are owned by one or two of the families there that are based there, but this allows M&F to hopefully provide some of their services and software services that they provide very efficiently here and in New Zealand and other places around the world, to do it in Singapore at a much more competitive rate, but more importantly to the same clients that they deal with here. You know, a lot of the clients that M&F deal with are multinational clients, and once again, some of the biggest technology companies in the world. Japara announced that it got full accreditation for a recent acquisition that they completed about 4 months ago. So for people that didn't see that, Japara acquired a business called Riviera Health, I think it's called. And the reason why that acquisition came up is because that particular business was forced to sell due to accreditation issues from the government or the regulator. So they weren't providing a quality of care that was required by that regulator. So the regulator basically said, you need to sell to someone who we believe has a high quality of care and a proper service offering, which in this case was Japara. Obviously, the risk for Japara was they needed to get the accreditation back to certain sites, and pleasingly, they've done that very quickly. So there was a lot of scepticism in the market about how quickly they could do that. They've done that. Now we believe all the focus will be on, well, how quickly can they fill those particular sites back up now that they're fully accredited. And they're implementing, I suppose, the service offerings and the product offerings that most Japara facilities would have. So if they can prove that they can do this particular acquisition, you know, there's no reason why they can't do more. And, you know, to put that in context, there's about, you know, give or take, I think, you know, last time we saw, there's thousands and thousands of aged care operators, but based on last year's result, over 50% of aged care operators now are not making money. So we think there's more consolidation that's going to take place, because the regulator is pushing a high level of care. They want compliant operators who do have a service service offering that people need and want and does meet their expectations. And a lot of just single man, single person operators just can't do that. Finally, TOT, which is a listed managed fund or a listed cash box that does lending to developments. Pleasingly, they provided FY19 guidance for their distribution. So that's next year. They've said it should exceed, or it will be 12 cents or potentially exceed that figure. You know, to put that in context, today the share price, I think, is about $1.25. So it's effectively on a 10% distribution yield. You know, the theory here is, as we've said all along, as TOT continues to deploy more and more of their capital, obviously you should get a higher distribution yield as they've got more capital out the door. The second point is that we continue to see the banks continue to retreat from lending to, you know, developments, developers, or whatever they may be. And this allows people like TOT or businesses like TOT to lend to select developments that provide adequate security and have a good backdrop for future sales, but at the same time get a good rate of return. So often TOT are getting 10-2 or 12-2 rates. So pleasingly, hopefully they can continue to do this, and we haven't seen any reason why they can't. On slide 10, just looking forward, obviously a big 3 months coming up for NSC, and the reason why we say that is because obviously results season's coming up. M&F, for example, is on the 28th of August. As I've said to people, we've followed this business for a long time. Interesting to know that this is the first time in about 6 years that M&F moved that date out. Obviously not sure why, but one to watch. What we'll be looking for is obviously the organic growth indicators of the business. They've reaffirmed guidance. They've said the organic growth in the business continues to go to expectation, which obviously the market was worried about, we believe. Every man and his dog will be looking at Pennytel. Pennytel's that new business they invested in that obviously led to the share price decrease and provided us with the opportunity to invest. Everyone will be looking at the number of subscribers they have on Pennytel. They've got it to about 8,000 subscribers. It could be higher, it could be lower, but I think when you look at 8,000, it's really neither here nor there. 8,000 doesn't create a business case. It'll be more about the commentary and the trends moving forward. And then finally, any comment around potential further acquisitions and the Singapore integration of that recently acquired business. M&F, we expect to have a net cash balance sheet at the end of the result. They've been an acquisitive business over time where they can leverage their own software into other people's businesses and obviously take out costs. They've been very good at doing that over the past 7 or 8 years, and we'd expect them to continue to do that or be very disciplined in regards to price. Japara reports the day before M&S, so we've given the dates just above here. As I've said, we'll be looking for an update on the integration of new IT systems, so that they're putting in new employment and software systems, which is obviously no easy feat when you have many, many employees, but should lead to efficiency gains. They have put wording around that, so we'll be looking to see how that integration is going. Obviously, as I've said, progress on the recently acquired Riviera business and the updated occupancy on this. And then finally, any update on the development pipeline. So obviously, they've got a number of sites that they're developing to try and meet the demand, as there's a huge demand for residential aged care, but it comes down to able to be building these facilities on time and on budget, which is obviously hasn't been that easy to date. So we'll be looking for any update that they can provide on this. And then finally, MTO, so one of our newer holdings, Motorcycle Holdings. They made a very large acquisition last year called Cassons, which is a wholesale distributor of motorcycle parts and products. So think if anyone drives a motorcycle, if you bought a helmet, you might have bought it through a Cassons. Cassons might have wholesaled that product. So we'll be looking for any, obviously, commentary around that in regards to synergies and potential revenue growth. Commentary around the potential to increase the sales in recently acquired stores. So they're always acquiring underperforming stores. Motorcycle Holdings has built this business on buying underperforming stores. They don't buy top-performing stores. They look for cheap acquisitions and then obviously use their systems, processes and software and marketing strategy to build the sales up. And then finally, which is more of an interesting point, but obviously Harley-Davidson is a top-selling motorbike and a high-margin product for Motorcycle Holdings and others. But unfortunately for Harley-Davidson, they've completely missed the customers' expectations this year and launched a bike that just has not sold well compared to what some of the other ones did in the past few years. So Harley-Davidson have a September conference, I think, where they'll touch on their development pipeline and new products that are coming to market, and hopefully it provides a much better reception for potential buyers of those bikes. So with that, Ben's here to run through the NAC slide, so we're just going to put him on the phone, so just excuse me for 1 second.
Thanks, Sebastian. So just updating on the fourth quarter for NAC. For the quarter, we were down 1.5%, so it was a pretty tough quarter for the portfolio. That rounded out the full financial year 18, where we had a portfolio performance of a little over 10%. I guess you consider that okay, but certainly below where we would have expected it to be, particularly given how strong our first half was, and also certainly in the context of what the wider index and how that performed. So we really didn't keep up with that in the second half. Just a few stocks that contributed. So Elders was the largest positive contributor to the portfolio for the quarter, and it was a very eventful quarter for them as well. They released their half-year results in May, and following that there was plenty of commentary and media speculation around potentially a transaction where they were looking at buying a New Zealand business, PGG Wrightson, which is yet to eventuate. And then finally, in the later stages of the quarter, they announced a trading update, which pretty consistent with some of the other agricultural players, surrounded the dry conditions for a lot of agricultural producers at the moment, which has significantly impacted their business. Fortunately for us, we reduced the position in Elders following their half-year result. The reason for that was, so Elders make a lot of their money on an agency fee on the trading of livestock, so sheep and cattle. The cattle price has come off quite a long way, and they haven't seen a volume response for that either, so naturally you'd expect that to hurt earnings. On top of that as well, obviously the business has been hurt by the current drought conditions that we're seeing. I think I read this morning that it was the fourth worst drought since records have been taken since 1900. So that's affecting their agricultural chemical products as well that are being sold to farmers. So we were quite fortunate that we sold out of the position most of the position, and now Elders is basically out of the portfolio for the time being. Despite the high quality of management and the fact that the business is doing very well considering the conditions, I think it's prudent for us to take a wait-and-see approach for the time being. I think, certainly the thing that Nufarm put out an announcement yesterday regarding agricultural chemicals, and I think the most important thing that came out of that was just the inventory build that's happening in the channel. So I think that'll take a while to wash through, and it'll probably see some further pain to come for some of those players in the industry. The second position there, M&F, which was the biggest detractor to the portfolio for the quarter. If I could just echo Sebastian's comments on that. I mean, we have owned M&F for about 4 or 5 years now. We know the management team very well. We know the company very well. And they've consistently delivered on what they'll say they'll do, and they've consistently delivered a very high rate of earnings growth. Now, as many of you will know, not every business can sustain a 20% growth in earnings year on year without having to reinvest back in the business. And Rene, the MD, announced a reinvestment program of $4 million, which is quite small in the scheme of things, which is the reason the share price has come off. From his track record and from our knowledge of Rene and his strategy, we're certainly happy to back his judgment in allocating capital. In this scenario, the worst case outcome is that they don't proceed down that path if it doesn't work, and then the worst case is a $4 million hit to the balance sheet, but the company's currently holding a net cash position anyway, so you wouldn't expect any long-term ramifications from that. And then thirdly, Smart Group, they also had a pretty eventful quarter. They raised capital, and at that time we took the opportunity to increase our position in the business. So again, this is a management team that's consistently delivered on expectations and everything that we expect of them. We have owned the position on and off for almost the life of the portfolio in NAC, and we're very comfortable with it at the moment. I guess going forward for SIQ, over the past 12 months, they've been pretty active and have completed 4 key acquisitions. They've stated that they've been integrating them successfully, and we'll look for further commentary around that as we move forward. They report their earnings on the 22nd of August, and I guess the key thing that we'll be looking for them is on the process, the progress on the integration of those recent acquisitions. The second thing that we'll be looking for is particularly an update on the capital options available. So they raised money recently, which at the time they said was to improve their balance sheet position in order to put them in a position whereby if any M&A opportunities did arise, and they would be in a position to act quite quickly. The management team has taken a while to do that so far, and we put that down to the fact that they're quite cautious and prudent when making the decisions around any acquisitions. So moving over the page to slide 12, you can see the portfolio at the moment has 11 positions and a cash weight of 6.63%. I've touched on SIQ and what we're looking for from those guys. The next position there, Hello World, is a relatively new position in the portfolio. Hello World operates in the travel agency space, similar in parts to what Flight Centre and Corporate Travel do, and is trading in significant discounts to both of those. It's run by Andrew Burns, who has a huge amount of capital invested alongside shareholders and has an excellent track record of over 20 years running travel agency businesses. They report results on the 21st of August, and we'll be looking for them really for an update on operational efficiencies and margin improvement. There's probably still a little bit of cost out that they can make in that business. And we'll also be looking for a bit of progress on their smaller New Zealand division, which is a relatively small contributor. It does about $6 million in EBITDA at the moment. We think going forward, potentially this can be up over $10 million. One of the biggest reservations we had with the Hello World position was the fact that they do have a lot of franchisee operators under the head company, and I'm sure everyone here has seen some of the issues that other franchisee businesses have had over the past 12 months. We've gone out and spoken to a few of those franchisee operators to get their side of the story and their picture on how they view the Hello World business. Importantly, the ones that we've spoken to are very happy and are making money as well, which is obviously a critical ingredient for Hello World to be successful. And then thirdly, they're also a recently re-initiated position being Reece. So we owned Reece in NAC a couple of years ago and sold out as we were taking more caution around the housing cycle in Australia. The business recently announced an acquisition called Morsco in the USA. Now, Morsco is a business that's reasonably similar to the Reece core business in Australia, but it's obviously a smaller scale and operating in a much bigger market as well. Probably the difference, the key difference on the headline between the two businesses is that Reece do EBITDA margin about 14% versus Morsco at just under 6%. So what we know of the Reece management team and what we know of their executional capabilities, we do think there's margin expansion in that market. And then obviously operating a smaller business in a much larger market in the US does come with challenges, but we do think that potentially there's a greater amount of top-line growth there as well. So we feel that the acquisition has been very well measured by management, and we think it offers another growth pillar for Reece going forward. So at the result, we'll be looking for update on that. They've also made a couple of recent very small acquisitions in New Zealand as they grow up their business there. And then obviously commentary around the core Australian residential market and how they're seeing conditions in that business. But a company where we probably view the management team as one of the highest quality on the ASX and one that we're happy to be back owning. So with that, I'll hand back to Sebastian, who can talk a little bit about the market and how we see it.
All right, thanks, Ben. So I'll try and at a reasonable rate of knots. Can you hear me now? I'm back, so people can hear me. So, as I said, so market review. So just touching on 14, 15, and 16 here, but, you know, I think these are extremely topical. You know, this is what we think about as an investment team. This obviously, I'm sure, as investors, you would have this feedback and ask yourself similar questions. But you know, clearly on, you know, slide 14, this looks at the ASX 200 returns by two key factors. The first one being high EPS growth stocks. So that looks at stocks which had the highest forecasting growth over that year and what their return was, and as you can see, was about 9.2%. When you look at stocks who had the highest free cash flow yield, their return was about 1.2%. So clearly growth, you know,
stock that can, you know, grow at a supreme rate or forecast to grow at a supreme rate are the ones that outperform. You know, value is definitely out. You know, people are saying value investing is dead, and momentum investing is definitely in vogue and has been in vogue for the last 12 months. When you flip over to slide 15, I think this breaks it down a bit more and gives it a bit more context. You know, the Small Resources Accumulation Index, for example, returned 50% in FY17, which is quite frankly just a huge result. And a lot of that's driven by, you know, obviously the resurgence in some of the commodity prices, you know, nickels, your coppers, your lithiums to a certain extent. And as people would know, if you've got a higher cost base, a small resource company, because you've obviously probably got a tier two or tier three asset, you know, a small movement in commodity prices means your earnings growth just goes through the roof because you're essentially a leveraged play. Obviously, it works the other way. If commodity prices go down a little bit, well, they could essentially put you out of business. If you look at the Small Ordinaries Accumulation Index, obviously a big beneficiary of that small resources increase. Then you can see the small industrials, which returned about 18, and then you can see the ASX 200 industrials, which returned about 8. You know, so you can see there's a significant dispersion in regards to the sectors that performed over FY17. It was really, obviously, yes, it mattered what you, in my view, the year that was, it was what you did own, but it was more to the point of what you didn't own. And if you go over to slide 16, I can really try to highlight some of these key points. You know, this is the review of the Small Ordinary Industrial Index, and really we've highlighted, well, what were you know, the highlights of that particular indices. And as we can see here, we've listed every stock that generated a return of over 100%. And as I've said time and time again, and, you know, this has been drilled in me over the past 11 or so years, is, you know, the first thing we think about is not losing money. You know, so that comes into account, you know, your balance sheet, your management team, the sector that you operate in, and the inputs of that particular business. Obviously, if all those things go well, you should make a reasonable return. Obviously, where it can leave you extremely exposed is when those particular inputs or that psychology doesn't really matter. And I think we've probably gone through a particular environment. We continue to go through an environment like that. And that's when you can see your EMICOs of the world, which is a mining services business or a leasing business. Essentially, that business was, you know, to a certain extent, almost broke about 2 years ago. And obviously, pleasingly for them, they've done a recapitalisation. And obviously, utilisation rates of Yellow Kit have gone up, which ultimately gives you a leverage return. Appen, a technology stock, software and services. LaVisa, obviously a retailer, some of you would be aware. They make, I suppose, discounted jewellery for teenagers. Afterpay, which would be one of the most topical businesses now, is essentially a buy now, pay later product for the millennials, so anywhere between 15 to 25 years of age. And then NRW, once again, another mining services play with a very large exposure to contract mining of, you know, iron ore businesses. So it gives you a feel of really what went up and where we should have been. And I think when we review this, there's some that we clearly would have missed, some that we would never have invested in. So, you know, the ones that probably hurt a little bit more is your IDP Education to the World, which is an education provider, very high quality business, but a very, very expensive business, for example. Just a couple of macro indicators, which I think also helps just to touch or finish off the conversation. And one that, you know, really hasn't been spoken about too much, but obviously getting spoken about a little bit more now, is obviously yield curve in US bonds. So obviously the yield curve has been dropping at a rate of knots more recently. And if hopefully a few people can work out, the last time it got to zero or even negative was the last time we had a recession or a significant correction in the stock market. Obviously, you went through the tech bust in 2000, and then you went through the GFC around that between 07 to 08 period. We're not saying we're going through a period of that. You know, I think people continue to talk about just the general relaxation of investor psychology and awareness of risk and capital preservation would be my argument. And the ultimately thing that could drive that and bust that wide open, in my view, is rate and obviously economic growth. And if you go over to slide 18, and this changed last night, this hasn't been updated for last night, the Treasury yields for 10-year bonds actually broke out for the first time in a long time. So now they're through 3%. Ultimately, that you as an investor, you have to dictate to yourself, am I better off owning a Treasury yield where I'm getting 3% risk-free, or am I better owning, the Facebook and the Netflix of the world? And, pleasingly, obviously those stocks have performed extremely well. But as I mentioned to someone the other day, Netflix missed their subscription numbers just the other day, and the stock was down 15%. Sure, people can say it's up 100%, but if you've got to remember that 15 on the 100 is actually magnified, so it's really down 30% on your cost base. It won't take much. Obviously, there's some very good businesses out there, but obviously what we're focused on first and foremost is what we're paying today for those businesses. And hopefully that provides us with a level of comfort of capital preservation that we're not going to lose our investors. As I've said time and time again, people tend to want to talk to the investment team when they're losing money. It's not about how much money you make, in my view. It's about obviously minimising your down periods. And then finally on slide 19, as I mentioned with Saunders and BSA, but this is a slide that was recently updated by CIMIC about last week. And obviously it only used to go to about 2020 or 2021. But this is major infrastructure projects in Australia, but the key word is transport. This is just transport projects in Australia. When you're forgetting things like hospitals, you're forgetting things like NBN, one of the largest infrastructure projects in Australia, there is a mountain of work around. When you think about 5G that's being rolled out for the telcos, there is plenty of work around in the right space. And I think the big blue one, for example, that stands out, City Metro, City and Southwest is a new one. And there are ways to get exposure. Obviously, anyone who knows BSA picked up a contract with NorthConnex, as you can see, NorthConnex hidden in there somewhere, to do the fire installation for that particular project. There will be more opportunities around. It's just about how you get quality exposure to that particular thematic. To finish off, we've done an appendices here, so I suggest everyone go through it at their own leisure. So obviously, touching on the dividends, but more importantly, we've actually updated visually our investment process and ESG framework, so people should obviously look at that if they wish. And then on slide 27, we've just released our national investor roadshow dates as well for those six capital cities. So please, if you wish to RSVP, you can go to the NAOS website. Before I go to questions, I've actually got some questions that have been emailed to me, so I'll just touch on those quickly. I suppose, there's a thematic or a key focus of some of the questions, and then some are more stock-specific. So I'll try and touch on each of them to a certain extent. Obviously, in regards to NSC, what is being done to restore shareholder value and how long this might take from Bruce? Obviously, the million-dollar question. So in regards to shareholder value, I think you look at a number of key steps, but obviously the first one's performance. Obviously, what is done to then restore the performance of the fund? Well, we've got 11 investments that we think are very quality investments and hopefully will provide solid long-term gains over the next 2, 3, 4 years. Obviously, with that, we believe we're providing a very transparent investment process and framework to all of our shareholders, and hence the quarterly calls and the national roadshows, which are done twice a year. And then obviously, on top of that, it's about providing an LIC that provides a niche focus, a focus that everyone understands, a philosophy that everyone understands, and then hopefully providing an NTA uplift, and then obviously a growing stream of hopefully fully franked dividends, which is what we want to do. So we've announced the dividends have gone to quarterly. I'm sure no one has really picked up that the DRP actually buys shares on market. So, potentially that DRP, for example, could buy anywhere between 1, 2, 5, 6, 7, 8 million shares on market over the next 12 months. These are the little things that, in my view, over time, do close a discount and then hopefully take that NTA higher over the longer term. Just a touch, obviously, in regards to the dividend policy. So what is the policy? Obviously, the policy, as I've said, we want the policy to be a growing stream of fully franked dividends or franked to the maximum extent possible. If I could lead anyone in the right direction, you would be look at our other two LICs, NAC and NSC. So obviously, they've increased their dividend every year for 5.5 years, I think, now. So, that's obviously what we want to replicate in NSC. In regards to NCC, someone just touching on the share price, and it's a topical one. I think it's probably important to note, I think there's a few things that have happened. The first one being that obviously NCC about 6 months ago was trading at a very large premium. At one stage it was over 15%, I think. So I think there's three things that have happened. Obviously that premium's unwound over the past 6 months, which affects the share price. The second thing is obviously the performance of the fund over the past 6 months hasn't been good. If we did 12.5 to December and then 7.5 to June, that implies there's about a 4% difference over that second half. So the NTA fell by that amount together with the dividend that was paid. So that in effect is the share price of NCC. It is really now, it's about now back to NTA, and now it's about obviously growing that NTA over the next 12 months. Are the dividend payouts unsustainable? So as we've said with all our LICs, and if you look at all of our presentations, and it's actually in this presentation, I would point you to the profit reserve figure of these LICs, and then you can work out what the profit reserves are. So we are very cognizant of providing or keeping enough away in the profit reserve account to provide a dividend in a rainy day, because obviously performance doesn't go up forever, so you need to put some away so you can manage your dividend profile and hopefully grow it over the longer term. And then finally, just a stock question, one on COG. So just touching on the financial industry is obviously in a little bit of flux due to the ASIC probe from the Royal Commission, obviously a very good point. What's the silver lining for COG? As people would know, COG operates in the SME space, so small to medium enterprises. It does no retail products. This is important to note because the Royal Commission is all about retail products. The million-dollar question is, well, will this change? Potentially it will change. But as we've said and as we've been speaking to many, many different businesses, both listed and unlisted, it's all about risk. So the banks and Royal Commission, they're all focusing on lending and financing to people who can afford it, so high-quality lending. With the adequate risk measures in place. So obviously the banks want to use people such as COG, hopefully, who have the right compliance procedures in place so the bank can then adequately understand the client that they're ultimately financing. That's where the market's going. Ultimately, these people still need financing. It's just about getting a better understanding of who these clients are and getting the adequate information. And some businesses do that and some businesses don't. And it ultimately comes down to your investment into IT spend, compliance, employee knowledge, so through training and things like that. And we feel it will play into the hands of people like COG because they're now the largest in the space in regards to financing, equipment financing by a long way. So they could have afforded to reinvest into their systems and compliance over the past 2, 3, 4 years, whereby many